Some of the views expressed on the Mormon Channel are solely for the education and inspiration of our audience and may not represent the official position of the church.
I'm Nathan Wright, and you're listening to the Mormon Channel of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. It's been a century since one of the greatest tragedies of the 20th century unfolded in the icy waters of the North Atlantic, the sinking of the luxury liner Titanic. More than 1,500 people perished, each heart-rending loss representing an individual with hopes and dreams, with a family, with a story. One of those casualties was Irene Colvin Corbett, a Latter-day Saint from Provo, Utah. Here to talk about Irene's notable life and death is best-selling author Anita Stansfield. Anita, thank you for taking the time to be with us today.
It is a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
You were so drawn to Irene Corbett's story that you wrote a book, Passage on the Titanic. Please tell us how that came about.
Well, I have a dear friend, Gary Cook, who was doing research with the desire to put together a documentary about Irene and a couple of other Mormon connections to the Titanic, and he shared that information with me, and I was just very drawn to it and felt especially drawn to Irene and realizing the sacrifices that she had made and that her family had made, and just became intrigued with it. And so I wove it into this book, which is partially fiction. Part of my reason for that is that my readers expect a happy ending, and I wanted some of the characters to be alive at the end of the book. But I was able to take Irene, her real story, and turn it into a very solid secondary character that had a great deal of influence on my other characters, and hopefully in a realistic way that expresses Irene's life, illustrates the kind of person that she was and the important points in her story.
It seems research for a project like this would have to be rather multi-pronged. Tell us a little about that. What did you read and who did you talk with, et cetera?
Well, Gary was a great help to me, especially in getting me started. He had researched Irene's story quite a bit, knew quite a bit about her family history. I confess that I'm not generally much of a historian. I consider myself to be a great storyteller, but really don't like to do research and shy away from history in too much detail. I prefer to keep the history more vague when I write historically. And when I had written about Emma Smith, that kind of broke that pattern where I had to work hard to be very, very accurate, but I had some great historical people to consult with and tried to stick more to the storytelling. So I started with Gary's help and then just started looking on the internet. There's some amazing information, newspaper articles from the time period. There was some great stuff in the Salt Lake Tribune, actually, when the Titanic sank, and with Irene being a Utah resident who lost her life. I got some great information there. There's also a great website called Encyclopedia Titanica.
Saw it.
And that is great if you have any interest in learning more about the Titanic. It has passenger lists and profiles on a lot of the people. And I got a lot of information on Irene there and was able to branch out from there also.
So what do we know about Irene's history? Let's start with her family history.
Well, her father was an LDS bishop in Provo for about 20 years, I believe, at the time. And so she had a good, strong LDS upbringing. She graduated from Brigham Young Academy in Provo and was a very, very strong-willed and determined woman. As I studied her character, I found that I related to her in a way that drew me to her more and more. I found that she had really been drawn to statements made by Latter-day prophets about women being able to serve and do a great deal of good as well as be wives and mothers. And that was something that meant a great deal to her. And it was something that struck a chord with me because raised five children and have also spent my adult life being a writer, which has met with some challenges. But as we know, the mission of the Relief Society is for women to use their gifts and become their best selves and serve, as well as being wives and mothers. And Irene felt very strongly about that. And so she became a school teacher in Payson and loved it. And then as soon as she became engaged to be married, she was let go because at the time it was illegal for married women to teach school, which is
probably
quite
didn't
shocking.
Settle well with this person who felt so strongly about it.
Probably not. No, I don't think it set well with her at all. And so then she went into nursing because that was acceptable for her to be a nurse and to be a married woman and have children. And she enjoyed it and she was good at it. And apparently there was more than one physician that she worked with that noticed that she had exceptional skill and was very gifted, and it was suggested to her by more than one person, as I understand it, that she go to London and learn to be a midwife. And, of course, midwifery was very much needed. We had growing LDS communities with many children being born, and London was where the state-of-the-art understanding of midwifery could be learned. And so she struggled a great deal with that decision to become a midwife. Her husband was not very supportive, and neither was her mother-in-law.
Who were the people who were actually encouraging her?
Physicians that she worked with. Her parents were very encouraging. I find it interesting that her husband was not happy about it. And yet in the research that I've done, and I am not, you know, claiming to know all of the details, but I felt like from what I did learn that this was accurate, that he had some concern about what people would think of his wife, you know, going off for 6 months, leaving him and the children, and just really didn't want her to go. And that was a very difficult decision for her. By everything that we know about Irene, she was a very righteous and faithful woman, and that she made this decision very prayerfully. Now, her parents, and again, I want to point out that her father was an LDS bishop and had been for a long time, they made the decision to mortgage their home to support Irene in this endeavor, to pay for her travel and her education. And so the plan was for her to go to London, do 6 months of training, and come back and be a midwife. And so she did it, and on her passage home on the Titanic, she perished.
Do we know why it was London she went to? Was there a specific reason, a specific institution that was better than other places? What drew
her? Actually, there was. At that time, the hospital in London where she went to train was considered to be the best. They were teaching state-of-the-art technology in childbirth at the time. It was one of the first places where they were using ether to anesthetize women near the end to eliminate the worst of the pain, which is a technique that's not used today, but I know that it was used when my mother was having children, and so it did last for several decades, this principle. But it really was the best. And there were some people that wanted her to consider just going to the East Coast or finding someplace closer. But she felt very strongly about going to London because that was the best, where she could learn the best. And I really felt strongly from my research and from prayerfully considering the right approach to writing about Irene's character, that this was what she knew she needed to do, that she felt very strongly about it, and that going to London was the right decision.
Your descriptions of that time in London were really quite vivid. What type of research did you use to come up with that?
Well, ironically, I am a huge Dickens fan, and of course, anyone who has read Dickens novels or seen the great film productions made from his work understands that a lot of that was based in the streets of London and the horrors of life there, the difficulties for the poor and especially for the children and women who were in difficult situations. A lot of people don't realize that Dickens actually helped create a home for fallen women that helped them make a new start and then get passage to Australia where they could start new lives. He did a lot of social reform. So he not only wrote about these social issues, but he lobbied for them a great deal and made a big difference. And so in studying his life, I gained quite a deep awareness of what London was like during his lifetime. And he passed away in 1870. And shockingly, in my research, I realized that in regard to the poor, that not that much had changed, that there was some social reform in the making. There were ideas that were being discussed at the time, but there was no social welfare system in place at the time. And so the plight of the poor was still very similar to Dickens' time. And so I would say I got a lot of that insight from that.
And so this is a place that Irene found herself on her study abroad. Do we have any correspondence from her while she was there? Do we know much of what she did while she was in London?
There are letters, yes, that she sent home, some to her husband, her parents, her sisters. I spent a lot of time watching Titanic documentaries, and I could challenge you at Titanic trivia if you would like some other time. I know that she found the work shocking. She found the plight of the poor very shocking. And part of her assignment was to actually go into the homes of poor women and children to see to medical needs. And there was one statement she made about feeling like she would go into these homes and hold these sick children and that fleas would jump from the children onto her. And that was difficult to contend with. And but she had a great deal of compassion for the people that she was working with. But I'm certain that the seedy areas of London were nothing like what she had ever seen growing up in Utah. And so it was very eye-opening for her. But she had a very compassionate heart. That nursing gift in her was a strong part of her character, and I think that she felt like she did a great deal of good, and these thoughts and feelings were definitely communicated through her letters home during that time.
You've weaved the reality of Irene with some very interesting characters. Do we know of any friends or acquaintances she truly made while she was there?
She apparently did become fairly good friends with some of the other nurses that were in the same training program with her. There was connected to the hospital where she worked, nursing quarters where the nurses lived, like dormitories. And so she did have some friends there. We know that there were a few of these women, I believe, who were there to see her off that day when she boarded Titanic. We also know that she associated with the church there in London and made friends and acquaintances through the church. She was acquainted with the Mormon missionaries who were serving in London at the time. And that brings up the story of the Mormon missionaries who did not get on Titanic. There were, I believe, 8 who were scheduled to sail. They were all going back to America together, and one of them couldn't go and had asked the others to go on without him, but they had declared they would all go home together. And so because the one couldn't go, none of them sailed on Titanic, and they probably all would have perished being young and being male.
Male, right. We're visiting today with Anita Stansfield on Legacy about the life of Irene Corbett, victim of the ill-fated Titanic. On the Titanic's manifest, Irene is listed as a musician.
That's right.
Insights do you have about that?
Well, I found that fascinating because she played the piano and she sang, and it was obviously very important to her, especially when you consider that her career was that of being a nurse and that she was going to train as a midwife. And so we would assume she would register herself as one of those professions, especially since she was going home and she was now a certified midwife. And yet she registered herself as a musician, which says something about what music meant to her. And it must have also been an important part of her heart. And obviously she was very multi-talented and had many facets of her character.
Other than knowing what kind of person Irene Corbett was, do we have any idea what she may have been doing or thinking during that terrible 2.5 hours while the ship sank?
Well, obviously that's up for speculation, right? Because we have no documentation specifically about Irene. We have a lot of documentation from survivors who talked about the situation in general up to the time that the lifeboats were separated from the ship. I found in doing this that I had to make it a very prayerful endeavor because I felt the weight of writing about someone who had really existed. And again, I go back to when I wrote about Emma Smith, which was an enormous undertaking, and I felt it a great privilege and honor to have that opportunity, but wanted to do it accurately. I wanted to respect Irene as I respect Emma, and to try to tell her story accurately. And I can say that it strengthened my testimony of the ministering of angels. I do believe that Irene's story was meant to be told, and that it was a great honor for me and very humbling to have the opportunity to tell it. And so I do hope that the way that I portrayed her feelings and experiences may have some accuracy in a spiritual way. In putting pieces together, one thing I can say is that in having written over 50 novels, I focus a great deal on building a character. And you can understand if you have just a few distinct character traits, you can put together what might be missing and know how a person would respond put into a certain situation. It's very evident from what we know of Titanic that it was such an immense tragedy that it did what most tragedies do, and that brings out a person's true character. And so there was a great deal of courage exhibited by many people that night, and there was a great deal of cowardice exhibited by many people. And I believe that Irene's faith would have come through. She would have had a great deal of peace. She would have felt God close to her and angels close to her, as I believe many would have in the situation. And beyond that, we can only speculate. And that's why I ended her point of view as soon as my fictional character separates from her before the ship actually starts to go down, because I didn't want to assume too much, but more to just put an idea into the reader's head based on her character of how she would have been focused on helping comfort and support and sustain those around her as much as possible.
According to the online Encyclopedia Titanica that you made reference to, Irene's father received 2 telegraph messages as to the status of his daughter. The first one stated, New York, April 19th, Levi Colvin, Provo, Utah. Neither the name of Mrs. Irene Corbett nor anything like it appears on the Titanic's second cabin list of passengers as having sailed from Southampton, White Star Line. I expect when he got this, he was pretty relieved.
I would think absolutely relieved. And I have read those telegrams over many times and considered the irony of that situation. And as a parent, considering, oh, that's wonderful. She didn't get on board. And this brings up the fact that you mentioned correspondence. She did send a postcard that was dated April 1st, I believe, that said she would be sailing on Titanic. And so her family had every reason to believe she would be on that ship. And so you can only imagine the fear and concern when headlines came out that, you know, the ship had gone down. And then to hear that she wasn't on board, there must have been a great deal of relief, except that it was very short-lived.
As you say, short-lived. And it was just within minutes that he got a second telegram that stated, "Now fine name of Mrs. Irene C. Corbett is on the list of passengers having sailed from Southampton, but regret is not a survivor on Carpathia." So it's hard to imagine the swing of emotions that
absolutely
was probably happening.
Absolutely. And I think it's interesting in our day that we can make some bold comparisons to 9/11. I found as I researched this event, I was stunned at the overall impact on the culture and realized that I have experienced that myself. We've all, as adults, experienced that because we've lived through 9/11 and we can see life before and life after. And of course, that day on September 11th, there were many people who were in the position of Irene's parents wondering, you know, was my loved one still in the tower when it went down? And just the shock of the fact that something like that could have happened and that more than 1,500 people died and died so quickly would have been so hard for everyone to take in as a people. And the impact that it had in both America and in Europe was tremendous. But the personal impact for Irene's parents, being Latter-day Saints, I'm certain that they had the peace that the gospel offers. And I did a lot of pondering in thinking that if Irene was the only Latter-day Saint to perish, then how did the loved ones of the other 1,500 or so people manage? How did the other survivors manage? Which is a lot of the approach that I took in the book. How did the survivors and rescuers and loved ones respond to something like this? And the bottom line, there's only one true source of peace that we can find in any tragedy, and that's through our Savior. But unfortunately, a lot of people didn't have those answers and still don't have those answers. But hopefully we can keep spreading that.
As you mentioned, physical and psychological fallout from a tragic event like this seems to be what you placed most of your emphasis on in writing the book. What other insights can you share with us about dealing with tragedy?
Well, I mostly write about tragedy. Most of my books focus on social and emotional issues of one kind or another. And my solution is always the same, however it may be woven into the story, and that is that the atonement is the only way to completely heal. But that also has to be combined with the psychological truths that life is hard and they need to be the problems that we face need to be addressed and dealt with. And of course, 100 years ago, post-traumatic stress disorder and survivor's guilt and these kind of things weren't understood or acknowledged or addressed. And so I believe that it wasn't talked about near as much as it should have been, probably brushed under the rug, and there may even be some impact of that drizzling down through the descendants of the survivors today. I've wondered about that. But in the novel, I took a fictional survivor and a fictional rescuer. The ship still sinks, so that's a spoiler alert for anyone who wants to read the book. But it sinks before the middle of the book, so that from there forward, the approach is on healing. And to take the point of view of a rescuer and the point of view of a survivor and be able to see the different perspectives of what took place that night and how these people moved on and worked it through and tried to heal and get past it.
Thank you. We've been discussing the life of wife, mother, humanitarian, and Titanic victim Irene Colvin Corbett with best-selling author Anita Stansfield. We're so appreciative you could join us on the program today. Thank you.
Thank you. It was wonderful.
I'm Nathan Wright, and this is Legacy on the Mormon Channel, a media outlet for The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm Nathan Wright, and you're listening to The Mormon Channel of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We invite you to listen to new episodes of Legacy Saturdays at 1 o'clock. You can also download any Legacy episode at mormonchannel.org.